Message Point is literally redefining itself as an AI-first organization. That means how we look at data is different, how we look at technology is different, how we solution for things is different, right? And when you do that, you realize that you can actually go further, you can conquer taller mountains. There's a misconception that agentic, and maybe it's a newer term, but the agentic way of thinking is something new, right? It's not actually. If you look at AI research over the last couple of decades, multi-agent systems is a well-established research field within AI.
Welcome to Artificial Insights, the podcast where we learn to build AI people need and use by interviewing product leaders who have launched AI products. I'm your host, Daniel Maneri, and today I'm joined by Atif Khan, the Chief Artificial Intelligence Officer of MessagePoint. I met him through a local meetup group dedicated to generative AI, where he has been leading it and given us all a chance to explore deeper with him. And I think you'll be excited to hear how they've used generative AI at MessagePoint. Atif, could you introduce yourself to our listeners?
I'm Atif Khan. I'm a Chief AI Officer now at MessagePoint. But I've been in the AI space for a long time. I organically grew in the industry as software developer, computer scientist, and then went back to university to work on my grad studies to understand not just the engineering part of things, how software systems are put together, but also what's the science behind it. And during that part of it, I had done software engineering for a long time. I was like, okay, so now let's do something different. So got involved in AI in a capacity that was like, okay, so this is what I want to do now. And as part of my journey, I literally wanted to teach machines how to think. So that was the machine whisperer is the term I used for a lot of times for my initial PhD journey. But then I think what I realized was I'm also an applied AI person. So it's not, for me, it's not about just learning the science or learning the theory. It's actually making, building things happen. So the engineering part of me is more dominant. And as a result of it, throughout my career, I've worked with young companies. I've built things, built AI platforms, built big data platforms, made a lot of mistakes. And as a result of it, like, I think I've become wiser in terms of like how to engage with technology. So I've also advised at Communitech as a data growth coach with young companies, like just trying to figure out like how do we even engage with technology. So there's different hats that I wear. But in the end, I'm just a technology enthusiast. I like building things and I like to understand things. Now, for me, building requires foundational understanding so that I can break it and put a tech together again so that it's now in line with my intentions, in line with what I wanted to do, not just, I'm just engaging it as an audience, right?
Yeah. I've interviewed a number of people on that spectrum for the show before, where some would rather think about the requirements and how people are going to use it, and some would rather think about the how it's built and then move towards how it's going to be used. And for me, I really appreciate the, I need to know both. Like, we're going to break it apart and put it back together for this use.
Yeah. We lived in that framework where we were either one or the other. We were either scientists that we knew, right? Just thought about theories and thought about algorithms but never actually implemented them at scale in the industry. Or we were just in the industry. It's like, this algorithm is too difficult. It will take forever just to complete. We're not implementing it, right? And now that we're at a point where technology has allowed us to be able to do things bigger, better, faster in the industry, I think we need to know both. Even with my teams, there's heavy requirement and influence that you need to foundationally understand what you're building, but also you need to understand how it changes lives, how it becomes tangible, right? And one is not complete without the other, right? It just doesn't happen that way.
Could you give us an example of one time that's happened for you?
Yeah, so I had, in my company, I normally hire through, let's say, the master's program for around data science and machine learning. So the idea is that, okay, so these kids will come in and they'll work with us for a while, 4 months, 8 months type of stuff, and then traditionally they'll move into full-time employment type of stuff, right? And then I see this very clearly where this divide now happens. So a young person, I think she's first week into the work or something like that, and I've given her classical, like, problems, like, could you go build this classifier for me? And literally a couple hours later, I think I realized that she was crying. And I'm trying to understand if you could, what just happened. And so I talked to her. I said, what's going on here? She goes, my classifier is not working. Right. And then I realized that the mistakes that she was doing, she was literally taking the classroom activity and trying to apply it to how she was going to build the classifier. The data was noisier. There was different techniques that we had to apply. And she wasn't exposed to that. So she felt that she wasn't prepared well enough or she was missing something, right? And for me, it's like, no, what you're doing is correct. You just need to do it slightly differently. Just put on this other lens that don't expect all your data to be deduplicated, all your data to be like nice and clean. Just wear the different lenses on, wear the different lenses and look at the data differently and you'll be fine, right? And that has stayed with me for a long time because it wasn't just a one person thing. Like, I think it's a shift when we train people how they're learning and getting introduced to that technology and when they're applying the technology. There's definitely a difference. And sometimes people are smart and they just jump over that bridge really fast. Sometimes they get stuck there. And I think learning both sides of like how something's supposed to work and how you apply it could be different. Another example I use is like clustering is a common enough technique that we all learn in school. And we do clustering with dots, with points. Right.
And it's red and green.
And I was working with content that had, it was some sort of document that had bounding boxes around different things. So it was no longer points. It was rectangles. Right. So now I think the traditional algorithm broke down a little bit because if you just do points, then rectangles start to overlap and all hell breaks loose. Right. So you need to just change your mindset a little bit. So what does it mean? If it's no longer a point, if it's a 2D shape, for example, how do I cluster it now, right? It's not that clustering fundamentally is changing. The application has to be much more informed, and then you make those variations, right?
That's amazing how little actually has to change to just say you're now in contact with the real world and how you built it before isn't how you need to build it now.
Yeah.
Okay. And one question that I think is on everybody's mind for a podcast like this is, are you an AI?
Sorry, am I an AI?
Are you an AI?
No, I'm not an AI. However, if you look at my name, my first two initials are AI. So it's AIK, AI Khan. And this is a joke that my daughter unearthed and uncovered. It's like, Dad, do you know that the AI is in your name? It's like, what do you mean? And sure enough, so she showed me my name and I had not even reflected on this before, right? But my middle initial is I, so it literally is just AI Khan, right? So it's just, but I'm not an AI, no.
That's good to know. I feel like it's close enough to just be referenced like that with your daughter. That's hilarious.
Last year, she started her own AI initiative. So the journey was actually interesting because ChatGPT showed up and she was not allowed to touch ChatGPT at school. And I wanted her to learn this because I think from my perspective, it's like, you're not avoiding this. You have to learn this. So she was caught in a dilemma. It's like, I'm not allowed to use it at school, but you want me to use it. So now help me understand it, right? And then once she uncovered the potential, she's like, literally her question was, but my friends are not benefiting from it. So the idea showed up that, or in her mind, like, let's create a youth-led organization that's teaching AI to youth. And then she founded Youth Tech Labs, where they've brought people in from the industry, from academia, to teach young kids what AI is all about and the different aspects of it, right? So they've run successfully for last year. They're now into the second year. They have engagement from local companies. So there's sponsorship for local companies. The five teams that were chosen last year to like build their ideas into products. Like this, it's incredible how grade 11, grade 12 kids are making an impact in the real world with this technology, right? Yeah.
Wow, that's super cool. And even just to start an initiative like that and to get it supported is amazing.
She has surprised me nicely, yes. I thought she was going to run away in the other direction. Like, no, it's not for me, right? Like, no, but she has literally taken the bull by the horns and it's like, let's make this my own.
Oh, that's amazing. One other question that came to mind when you were introducing yourself is that title, CAIO, Chief AI Officer. And I know that's a recent thing for you. So I'd be interested in knowing, what does that mean? What is it, Chief AI Officer? And then how did you get there?
I think it was a natural progression to the journey that I was already on. So initially, my focus on AI was either research or build a product, right? And then as we got more comfortable with AI and playing with it, it dawned not just on me, but I think on all of us, that AI is here to make an impact, not just in your product or in your research part of it, but it's actually transformative enough to change everything, right? So how you do your daily work, how you think about solutions, how do you, for example, if you're sitting in 10 different meetings in a day, how do you actually consume that content out of those 10 meetings at the end of the day? Like what, right? So it was pretty clear that changing the product, changing the research is definitely the starting point, but changing the entire organization is where the right bang for your buck is, right? So everybody has to be somehow AI enabled, or in it has to start thinking about moving away from the horses and start thinking about the cars, right? That type of phenomena. So and it needs to naturally come in into their way of existence, their way of thinking, their way of working. So now the emphasis is, okay, so now that we've successfully built this thing for the last few years and taken to production, how can we go the next mile now and take the next step where we take the organization to the next level? So as part of that conversation, I think that the idea behind Chief AI Officer, and it's not unique to us. I think a lot of other people are thinking about it in the same way as well. It is still new. It's still fresh. And sometimes I think it's like, why not a CEO? Like, why Chief AI Officer? And I think in my mind, the idea is that AI is not just a technology piece. It's not just new computers, not just email. It has this cognitive ability behind it as well that we'll have to deal with. It has an impact both technically and from society perspective, from an organization perspective, from how we use it. So like there's ethical issues, there's responsible AI issues, like this. The picture is quite complex, right? Like once you start, once you've built something and you lift up your head, it's like, okay, so where am I now? And then you realize that these are all these things that you didn't care about before. You now have to figure out how to care about them, how to put it in a way so that governments don't find you, how to put it in a way so that it's aligned with the right way of how society is moving forward. I think those are concerns that we will have to figure out answers for very quickly, right? And as part of this new role, I think my shift is now to start thinking about these things as well and start engaging with them. So I'm talking to, or I'm part of different organizations in terms of locally. So the Chamber of Commerce, for example, is a good place. I'm involved with the Canadian Chamber of Commerce, as well as the local Chamber of Commerce here in KW. But just try to figure out like, okay, so what is it that we're all trying to do? Like kind of how do we move forward? And it's more than building, right? So just literally, in my mind, that is that role, the bigger picture, and then the ability to be able to draw that bigger picture for other people.
And has that resulted in changes in the company already?
Yeah. So I think within MessagePoint, for example, it took us, we've been playing with AI for almost 8.5 years. So I came back to MessagePoint 8 years ago, roughly, just to establish the AI practice. And literally at that particular point in time, it was just another augmentation of our product offering. And now it's AI first. MessagePoint is literally redefining itself as an AI first organization. That means how we look at data is different, how we look at technology is different, how we solution for things is different, right? And it's not always like just throw more people on it, but it has to be right, figure out the right optimizations. And when you do that, you realize that you can actually go further, you can conquer taller mountains, like it, just because putting the right foundation helps, I think, right? So Making AI first definitely helps, but it is a mindset that is not there. And it requires some sort of twisting and reimagining. And it's like, how do I even think about these new things? And especially hard if you don't even understand those new things, right?
Maybe that's a good place to spend some time then, is what would you say it means to be AI first? And what's maybe one example or way that's worked out so far to twist the way that people think about it?
So I think people will define AI first as differently. Like, let me start. The first step for me for this journey is that when I look at AI, like from my perspective, it's an artistic expression of cognition, right? So that means when I'm thinking, can I take that thinking and have machine reproduce it, have machine enhance it, right? So literally, the way people paint and the way people write books is it's just literally just that, but it's bigger and it's better, right? So starting from there, if you can understand that it is that thing, so it is an expression of human cognition or extension of human cognition, it allows you to take expert knowledge, capture it, and reproduce it on demand. I think once you understand that, then at least from my perspective, what it means to be AI first becomes very apparent, right? So you need to take that concept of taking things that you were doing before that required human-level involvement, human-level tasks, can we potentially look at a solution that is now machine-first, right? Understanding where there's a difference between the AI muscle and the physical muscle that we have, but right, in terms of a person can't possibly consume thousands of documents in a finite amount of time, where the machine can, right? So understanding like, okay, so if you're developing a new solution or if you're looking at a new strategy, leveraging that part of the machine that can actually do that heavy duty lifting, that the machine flexing that muscle is much easier, much better. But literally also mirroring the two together so that one is not independent of the other. So if the machine is flexing that muscle, the human is getting benefit from the muscle. The machine is not just flexing that muscle just for the sake of, hey, I'm a cool AI machine and I can read a lot of documents or whatever, right? There has to be a need, a use case that we're trying to solve. There has to be a purpose behind an activity that we're trying to do. And it's the marriage of the two, that the human being now being able to do things differently just because they're thinking about problems differently. So it's not no longer, let me just, like, for example, if you're trying to figure out like all the pages and then across documents are similar, I'm not just putting them, printing them and putting them on a table and looking at them physically. An AI first strategy will now require you to say, okay, can I just have the machine label those pages for me and then I can go back and then exert my control or my opinion on it in top of, right? So just thinking differently, but understanding that AI allows you that cognitive ability that we didn't have before and apply it and express it in a way that we didn't know how to do before.
And is there something you've implemented so far at MessagePoint that enables that in a new way?
So the business that MessagePoint is customer communication management. And what that really means is there's a lot of text that people generate using the MessagePoint platform. There's communication, business communication is just not just the text that shows up, but also the images and how it looks. There's a lot of effort that goes behind the scenes in terms of choosing the right language, phrasing it correctly, putting it together on a piece of paper so that it looks the right way. How do you take that? What's on a piece of paper, let's say in 2-page print materials, like now how do I take that to an email so it's not losing its impact? And then more importantly, I think as a communication industry, company, multiple languages or the ability to be able to make people functional, even if they don't speak a new language, for example, and they can still understand what is it that they're working on, right? It's a sentiment. So there's a lot of pieces that we were able to, over the last 6, 7, 8 years, we were able to bring to the table where the CCM pieces are now foundationally different. One of the big things that we did was around this ability to be able to look at content and tell you why these two things are different, regardless of language. Or look at translations and explain to you why this is a good translation, why this is not a good translation, right?
Wow.
There's the normal usual suspects. Let machine create some content in a regulated industry. Maybe machine does not create all the content, but maybe it morphs content from an approved template, right? But again, and the human being goes back and looks at it. But this translation was one of them. Machine can do the translation. Sure, that's fine. But then the extra mile for me was literally like, once we do the translations, we have human beings looking at the translations to figure out whether they're good or not. Why don't I just train a machine to do that, right? It was just a natural extension. Part of it was literally just looking at CCM use cases and say, understanding how we can change them. And then part of it was, now that I can change them, let me just go the extra mile as well and just do this other thing that we didn't think was possible before, right?
And I think maybe that's where knowing how it's built and how to take it apart is the most beneficial. And what would you say are some things that we should be aware of and keep in mind when we're looking for those AI-specific use cases?
In the end, AI is just an enabler, right? I don't believe if you take an AI stamp and stamp on top of your product and say it's an AI product, it's not a new product. It's not a different product. It's not a better product. AI is an enabler. And I think we need to understand that how does the AI piece matches with the, what is it that you're trying to do with the use cases? What is it that you're trying to do, right? To find success with AI, I believe that is the key thing. If you miss out, a lot of us are not going to be producers of AI as a product. So OpenAI is a producer of an AI product. Google is an AI producer of AI as a product. A lot of us are not going to be producers of an AI piece or offering, but we will be enhancing our own offerings using the application of AI, right? And yeah. I think that's where the magic lies. So not just putting AI stamp on top of it, but understanding how do we do these things differently, bigger and better. Vision is important. So if you, and vision is both from the AI perspective and also, but where, what is it that I want my business to do? What is it that I want my thing, my solution to do, right? And then with vision comes strategy. So yeah, so I want to be able to do this, but this is how I want to execute. And strategy is where the AI influence can come in a little bit more as well. Because you can now have a different strategy that you couldn't possibly have before because it just was not feasible, right? I think you mentioned experimentation. So playing with it, understanding it, breaking it, putting it back together again. More importantly, knowing its limitations. And understanding those limitations will keep changing. So whatever you've learned today is evolving rapidly enough that it's not going to stay stuck there. And then augmentation, put it on your thing, try to take existing use cases, existing people workflows, enhance those, make it part of you. People, it's like spell check, put in the word processor, let people write whatever they want to write, but let the spell check figure out dynamically on the fly when people have done something wrong, right? And then the last part is literally like implementation. There's, in the end, if you've played with the technology, researched with the technology, but you haven't benefited your core use cases, your core product, and you have not implemented, not taken to production, it's kind of game over, right? Like you have not actually benefited from it. But the idea that this new thing can make real difference once you align it to what you're trying to do, I think that's the foundation of it all, right?
Mm. And it sounds like finishing is one of the important things.
Finishing is definitely one of the important things. Yes.
Yeah. So what advice would you have for leading that we built something, but now we really want to be AI first?
So let me maybe give you a slightly different example, right? So let's say I give you 1,000 numbers to add or 1,000,000 numbers to add, right? Adding numbers is an easy task. We've all learned it. We all can more than capable of doing it. Certain people will literally just like take the 1,000 numbers and start adding them manually, right? Certain people will just say, okay, maybe let me find some patterns in the data. And then maybe I can use those patterns and data. And this comes with experience. Like the more you know about your industry and about your technology, the more experience that you have, the better you can do this. Certain people will say, okay, let me maybe just go to the tooling. So I'm going to pull out Excel and I'm going to put all those numbers in Excel and get Excel to do it. Why should I do it, right? We're very comfortable with the Excel part today, right? So going back to an AI first, a lot of people, if you talk to saying, here's 1,000 numbers, can you add them? I think you'll be very hard pressed to find somebody who would just sit down and starts manually adding them together. A lot of people will take you to the Excel level, right? Which is good. That means they understand there's a technology that exists that can potentially do this for you and they can go and leverage this technology. Then the AI step literally is, instead of me looking at those 1,000 numbers and even importing them Excel, why don't I just show a picture of those 1,000 numbers to the machine and ask the machine, what is the sum? Right. And that's the mind shift that we need, where generative AI is Excel-like, but better, where it's taking away the need for you to learn the technology pieces as well. So you still have the business problem. You still have a determined outcome that you're looking for. Today, we're so used to just addressing by applying tooling to it. And we spent a lot of time learning those tooling and figuring out what is the right tooling. But generative AI, that the next level of that transformation is literally like, well, it also knows your tooling, right? So potentially it can look at those numbers. It can write a Python script in the background, add those to all those numbers, give you the Python script so you can validate that this answer is correct, as well as give you an answer in real time as well, right? So in my mind, an AI first approach is literally a mindset shift, which is now looking at AI as more of a tooling that can interact with you at a cognitive level. Like they can understand your needs at a cognitive level. That means your solutioning should change in accordingly as well, right? Like you should not be just limited to, let me go back to Excel. You should be now looking at entertaining, can I just show a picture? Can I just take a picture of these 1,000 numbers and send it to my LLM, for example, right? It's going to take some time. Like I think if I can use an example from my own life, my grandfather never trusted the bank tellers, right? My father never trusted online transactions. Like he always wanted to pay his bills in the bank itself. He didn't want to do it online. And I've never seen a bank teller or paid my bill in the bank. Like I just do it online, right? And I'm sure that this whole industry in China, for example, they don't even know what banks are. They're just the entire transactional ecosystems on WeChat.
Yeah. Right.
So I think it's a mind shift in terms of or change that is required to say, how do I look at the problem differently? Right. And not just using the words that we're just using AI, or we hired a whole bunch of PhDs, so now we're AI. It's literally looking at the problem differently is what describes or defines that you're an AI first company. The application comes after. Like once you can see it, once you can imagine it'll happen. But it's the ability to be able to say, I'm not using Excel anymore. Why can't I just show this machine the numbers and have it added together? That's the AI first mentality, right? And it's not very common right now. It will become common as more younger kids show up in workplaces. I think internet went to the same thing as well, where a lot of people didn't know, like, when you connect the information and make the cost of accessing that information like really cheap, what are the benefits of it? It took us a little while to get to realize what can we do with it, and all kinds of stuff showed up. Napster, I think, told us like how to make the cost of content delivery cheaper, right? For good or for bad. And then you have these companies now that are literally like Netflix, for example, it's a content delivery company, right? Spotify is a content delivery company. But I think with generative AI, for example, and with an AI first approach, we're literally at the cusp of similar type of transformations. Like, so what is it that now that we can make cognition cheaper and easier, what is it that we can do with it now, right? And the solutions will come, but it's getting into that frame of thinking, like getting into the mindset of like, this is how I'm going to address it. This is how I'm going to look at things. That's what AI first means.
And does that mean then starting with helping the people in the company to think AI first about their problems is a precursor to actually making a product that has the AI in it that solves a problem?
So I think you're absolutely right. And then as part of my new role, I think that is definitely one of my mandates, where every organization within Message Point has to become an AI first by learning about AI first, and then by trying to solve their things, do their day-to-day activities using AI if possible. So that means that we not have to teach them what it is, but also enable them by giving them access to the right tooling, setting boundaries in terms of what we're expecting them to use. So I'll give you a more common example. A year and a half back, we were talking about Copilot for coding, for all our coders, right? In my mind, it was using Copilot to create unit test cases automatically based on the code that people have written, or have it do code reviews so that it can find things. Like, I think that was just a natural application of it, right? But that meant that we had to provide Copilot to everybody, each and every one of our developers, first step. Then the conversation was, do we show them how to use Copilot, right? And then there's different school of thoughts. Like one is like, I'm going to tell you exactly, this is how I'm expecting you to use it. My take on that was slightly different. I was like, no, I think every developer's journey is going to be slightly different with Copilot. I don't want to influence that journey in a way so that I don't want to stop them from learning something that they would have learned on their own. I want that journey to be organic, with the realization now that my expectation from the developer is that they'll be able to do more because they have this tooling now. So for example, if they're automatically generating the unit test cases, then they will be spending less time generating test cases. We'll be spending less time doing code reviews as a team, for example, right? So I had to change my expectations. And then in return, they had to figure out, if I don't use the tool, I can't meet these expectations.
Ooh.
Right? So it was almost became a necessity. It's like, if you want to go there and if you want to play in the big boys park now, you have to have different equipment, right? And it worked out really well. I think people didn't feel like that they were pressed to learn something. I think everybody's journey became their own. But at the same time, we all agreed what the desired outcome was as an organization. These are things that we're looking improvements on. Less code reviews, more robust code that has better coverage from unit testing perspective and all that stuff, right? And then these are things that we're concerned about today anyways, and we were just doing them manually before, right?
Yeah. All things, importantly, that you can measure as well.
You can definitely measure each and every one of those on a daily basis with every commit.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Wow. And I think you mentioned just before that we're essentially at the cusp of figuring out how we can provide a lot of value in society, I think, even with AI, similar to how the internet made it cheap to deliver content. So I was interested to know, what do you see as that future? What do you see as potential big opportunities for value?
I think if I generalize that question, I think maybe where's AI heading? Is that okay?
Yeah.
It is hard to predict where it's heading.
Right.
But at the same time, I think there's patterns that we can see, and those patterns are tangible. The patterns are extremely real. It's changing at a rapid pace. So there's no denying that. That means it's getting exponentially better day by day type of stuff, right? We're going to get into a world where it will be around us all the time. For example, if you're sending a text message, it just be there. Like these days, for example, you don't have to build an emoji. You don't have to figure out the exact text combination. The emoji just shows up as you're writing stuff, right? It's changing fast enough. It's going to be everywhere. That means we need to figure out what are the rules of engagement? What does governance look like, right? If I'm using AI as a student versus if I'm using AI as an employee versus if I'm using AI as a doctor, what does that mean? I think it's going to be different for different people. But AI, especially the way things are shaping up, I think it's almost, if people believe that it won't be there or their businesses or their lives are not going to be impacted by it, I think they're living in a bubble that will burst pretty fast, pretty soon. I also believe that, I'm sure you won't find a person today, maybe everybody's very strict, most of the people that you meet into today will have their cell phone on them.
Yeah.
Okay? It's a device that is a very capable device, a device that records your communication, a device that maybe potentially constantly listening to you, is a device that knows exactly where you're going, right? The extension of that is literally, when you contemplate AI is going to be everywhere, is the digital you or digital twin with AI, right? So... I used to spend a lot of time gaming. So that means like in worlds that are not real, but spending time walking around those worlds, making transactions in those worlds, fighting battles, and then all that type of stuff, right? I think that the natural world, the physical world, and the digital extension of it, what you can potentially do. So if you go to a market, maybe you can buy, sell things differently, better. Maybe you're informed about what is available in that market through your digital twin in a much better way, much deeper way. Your transactions could be different. If you want to inspect something, like you're interested in buying something, maybe that experience is not different as well, right? But the idea of the digital twin showing up, both from a consumer perspective, but also from a, for example, research perspective or simulation perspective. As an engineer, I'm a big believer the importance of simulation was drilled into me. Like, you don't put engineering solutions out there without doing simulations, right? But I think this ability to be able to create new universes, create new worlds on demand, guided and constrained by what we believe is possible, I think that's going to be a reality around us. In all of that, I think this technology part that really excites me, but I think the governance part is also important, ethics of how we integrate AI into our daily lives. And then in the end, it's going to be a complex journey, right? So we have these tooling today. We have cars, but we have regulations around cars. When cars make us mobile enough that I can go and still report to a company in Toronto, for example.
Right.
But at the same time, a car can also be dangerous, right? And then you can say a lot of that. You can say the same thing about a microwave, right? It just makes my Let's experience better, but it could also be deadly if not used right, right? I think we're going to learn very fast that it's going to be everywhere. Our existence is going to be enriched by it as well, but we need rules around in terms of how to engage with it very fast, very quick.
I like that about governance. I often hear it in a stuffy corporate way where it's more abstract, but to say that it actually is governance that's going to decide how we use it as a society on a daily basis is, I think, the more beneficial perspective even, but not as common.
I think AI will maybe make the term governance less dirty, like, or less, it'll make it more real for people. Like, if I know the rules and if I know like, how I'm using it, and then maybe it's not just I'm not a corporation, so I don't have to worry about it. But if you're driving a car, you have to worry, you have to still obey the laws, right? You still need to know when the red's led, you should stop. When there's a pedestrian crossing, you should let the pedestrian go. I think the governance will become more tangible, more understandable, more and less complex, because the term itself is overused. It's thought of like, well, maybe it only applies in for legislation, or maybe it only applies in the corporate world. I think it applies now in our daily lives as well. People will just understand it better. And the result of it, we have social norms, like social niceties, social way of engaging people. I think we have similar type of things that will show up for AI as well.
And last question, was there anything you'd like to share about what you're working on now or how people can connect with you and follow you?
Sure. I'm going to say if it's not, the answer is not generative AI, I'm not doing my work properly. So for the last two and a half years, I'm heavily involved in different parts of generative AI, which is thinking bigger, better with generative AI. So it's multimodality, it's multimodals, it's agentic workflows. Literally trying to grasp in terms of how and where this beast is heading, right? And then trying to stay on top of it to have that, to be part of that journey and not fall off, right? So that there's a lot of time that we're building in terms of reimagining our product, reimagining our solution space, being AI first, as we discussed. I'm going to say this literally consumed me over the last 2 years. Change in that is also that I'm trying to understand the tangential aspects of concerns around bias and then around what legislation is now involved and what does it mean to put AI into somebody's life so it can be impactful, right? So those journeys are becoming more real as well. But a lot of time is literally just spent in the AI journey. If you want to get in touch with me, I said the best way to get in touch with you is show up for one of my peer-to-peer AI sessions. For me, I think it's incredible how people from different backgrounds have showed up and build a little community and asked and addressed and reflected on questions that are just needed to be talked about, right? And there's no better way to, if you want to reach out to me and make an impact, just show up for one of those sessions and then take part in that conversation and be that community, right? LinkedIn is good, but again, I think for me, was an organic way is just to just reach out through Communitech, for example, or through the generative AI peer-to-peer.
Awesome. I'll put links to those too for the people who are local. And if you have 1 minute, I was curious to hear what you thought about agent use cases. Is there, I don't know, some insight you can share on that?
Yeah, for sure. So we shouldn't say we think. There's a misconception that agentic, maybe it's a newer term, but the agentic way of thinking is something new, right? It's not actually. If you look at AI research over the last couple of decades, multi-agent systems is a well-established research field within AI, where people have done a lot of good work in terms of how different AI agents come together, collaborate in real time, experience their environment, and then make decisions autonomously, right? Mm-hmm. What's new today is that implementation is being done using generative AI, and hence the agentic solutioning around multi-agents coming together, but using generative AI foundational pieces to make that happen, right? That's the generative AI part is new, but the multi-agent part is not new. First of all, I don't think it's new. B, I think there's a lot of untapped potential. Like if I were to just go back and then, I don't know, pick some interesting papers from the last two or three decades, there's a lot of foundational concepts that I think will start to surface where we will figure out that for these agents to communicate, for these agents to observe, for these agents to do reasoning or reflection on what problem they're trying to solve, a lot of these things were solved already, but just in a different scope, right? It's not entirely new, but at the same time, I think its implementation is new. But at the same time, the design patterns that we had, the understanding that we developed in before under the multi-agent systems research material, I think that's all applicable. So I sense and I feel with the next 6 months into a year, this will explode. Not just because LLMs are better, because we're still making the connections back to the actual research that made it happen, right? If there's an analogous example, it would be like, so we knew neural nets were useful. It just took us a while to figure out when deep learning become useful, practical, when back propagation become real, like within our grasp, these things became more useful, right? So I think we just have to connect those dots. There's a lot of multi-agent research that's already out there that I think will be very useful. And it's gonna show itself within this ecosystem as well.
Mm. Is there any use cases that you're currently using for agents?
So MessagePoint is a complex platform that there's different aspects to it. It's a specialized platform. And this is not just MessagePoint. This is a lot of others, like medical systems, for example, banking systems, for the same thing, where if I want to get my work done, maybe it takes me 20 clicks, right? There's a lot of manual user-driven, a lot of SaaS systems are visited as well. Mm. And what that means is literally now parts of MessagePoint will be represented by expert agents that understand that little piece of MessagePoint or the platform itself, right? Mm. And then having those things come together in real time, say, I'm trying to do X, Y, Z. Can you guys figure this out and then help me do this? And let me know which button to push. That's magical, right? Takes away how fast somebody can become useful in our platform, right? That time goes away. It takes away the, if you don't know all the concepts around CCM, that's okay. You can still be relevant. You can still do your work. If you don't know Spanish, for example, it's okay. You can still do your work because we can measure things behind the scenes for you, or the agents can measure things behind the scenes for you. But the agents coming together and working together, giving the answers, you can almost think of it as like you can describe a new recipe or discover a new recipe on the fly, and then that recipe now gets you a new dish that you didn't think was made possible before.
It sounds like thinking of them as mini concierge.
Yes, like, yes, yeah, yeah.
That's exciting.
People have tried to build this one, like, okay, my entire system is just one. I think there's just too much onus, too much prompting, too much knowledge that one agent has to learn. I think it has to be multiple agents. Everybody, like a little mini specialized version of something. And then as soon as you do this, you now have to figure out like how do these things interact, right? And then, this is where I'm saying the multi-agent research that's been done before is going to become very relevant very fast.
I started this podcast because I wanted to stand at the gate of businesses using AI and see what separated hype from lasting impact. Back when cities had walls, you had to go into the city to do business at the market. So, if you wanted to talk to someone, you waited by the gate until they came in or came out. Do that enough times and you could talk to everyone. That's what I want to do. Stand at the gate of people doing business with AI and talk to them, see what they do and why they do it. If you know someone that's making an impact in the world of AI, would you connect them with me? You can find me on LinkedIn or shoot me an email at daniel@maneri.house. That's daniel@manary.house. Thanks for listening.